This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
Who is the new owner? Why the secrecy? Show yourselves, you cowards. Daniel Hill out.
Daniel Hill, longtime writer and editor for the RFT.
If we hadn't been so broke, we would have had some mighty fine lawsuits. But I mean, it was just crazy. I could tell you stories, some of which I couldn't actually read the ad.
It was just amazing how many people I heard from who were like, yeah, it was you guys today. It could be us tomorrow. We all understand that this is a ship that has a lot of holes in it. And it really makes me worried about the future of our democracy. I just don't think people can get the information they need from TikTok.
Mm-hmm. I second that. If I might jump in, that's well said. I mean, it really is a national crisis.
Yesterday, mid-morning, came news that St. Louis's alt-weekly, the Riverfront Times, had been sold to an undisclosed buyer, and its entire news staff was laid off. The paper has always held a unique position in St. Louis. In the 1970s, it became known for its free and, at times, raunchy personal ads. Over the years, it had a way of covering St. Louis that no other journalism outlet did through its stories on the city's arts and culture, its best of lists, irreverent headlines, and yes, serious journalism that routinely broke big stories. In a moment, RFT founder Ray Hartman will join us, but first we have Sarah Fenske here. She is the Riverfront Times 2-time and recent executive editor. As many of you may recall, Sarah was also host of this show from the summer of 2019 to the summer of 2022, and she continues to host our monthly legal roundtable. Sarah, welcome, and I'm so sorry to hear about yesterday's news.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So how did you first become aware that the RFT was being sold and that you, along with your colleagues, were losing your job?
Yeah, so I was summoned on Tuesday night. I got an email from the owner of the company asking if I could meet him very early in the morning on Wednesday. And I kind of thought I was being laid off. You know, these early morning meetings are usually not a good sign in print journalism. And I was somewhat prepared for that prospect. And instead, I was shocked to find out that we had been sold, and sold in particular to somebody who didn't want to retain the staff, wasn't planning to print an issue the next week. You know, all the copy that we'd been writing and editing, they didn't want, you know, weren't interested in our list of freelancers, that it was basically curtains for the RFT as we know it. And, you know, he wasn't able to tell me who had purchased it. He had signed a non-disclosure. And I appreciate that as somebody who has a hard time keeping a secret. It's good that I genuinely don't know, and I don't know what those plans are. But what was clear was that the current staff did not have a role in those plans.
Right. I mean, so being told that you're not having a job, but then that's the staff also would be losing their jobs. I mean, what happened after that point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a crier on a good day. So I started crying thinking about we have a married couple or had a married couple that worked there. They just had a baby. We just finished the maternity leave. He was still in his paternity leave. And I'm thinking, what about them? And I knew I had to go break the news to everybody. And it was just honestly, I thought about the people first. And it was only after getting to talk to them about their futures that I began to realize, holy cow, this paper, as we've known it, this is no longer going to print. I have all these story ideas. I had come in planning to publish something. There's no outlet for that story. Like, it's over. And that, I will say, I'm still a little bit in denial about.
Yeah.
The good news, I should say, I do want to clarify this, that while the Riverfront Times did not retain any of us, that Chris Keating, the person who informed me of this news, he is trying to retain some people that will continue to work at this corporate entity that owns alt weeklies in other cities. He's trying to find places for the staff. So it's not that everyone is totally at completely loose ends.
Right.
At minimum, you know, our managing editor has a job continuing to work there. And I think that's great. And I appreciate that he's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, the RFT, who knows what plans someone has for that publication?
Yeah. What was your relationship like with Chris Keating?
You know, every editor and publisher have a tempestuous relationship. It's in some ways like a marriage. You're kind of locked into trying to make something work. You respect each other when it goes well. You argue whether it's going well or not. I have a lot of respect for Chris. I know that he meant right by this publication. I don't think that this is the solution that he wanted. I appreciate that. You know, he had to do what he had to do. Print journalism in 2024 is in a very perilous place. He had other publications that he also had to think about. And I understand that the staff does not feel the same way as I do, but Chris tried.
Right. And we should note that Chris Keating is the owner of Big Lou Holdings, which sold the RFT. And St. Louis Public Radio has reached out to Chris, but we've not heard back. Sarah, are you aware of whether Chris explored any alternatives to this sale before it happened?
Yes, he absolutely did. And I was trying to assist in that. And we were very hopeful that we could make something work that would keep the RFT in something closer to its current format. We were not able to do that. And that is going to be one of the great regrets of my life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how much of this comes down to financial health? I mean, what was your understanding of what the financial health of the paper was?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to financial health. You know, we had been experiencing a very tough market for print advertising. The RFT had been coasting along, doing pretty well, and we hit some serious headwinds. And we were working so hard to fight those headwinds and reverse that. But, you know, right now there's national buyers that are just saying, we are no longer going to purchase print advertising. There are no good print alt weeklies. Why would we buy ads in one? Mm-hmm. And we were trying to say, hey, we're here in St. Louis. We're still doing good work. We believe that we have this readership that you will want to tap into. And they're saying, I'm in New York City. The Village Voice no longer exists. Why am I supposed to believe that this is worth spending money on when I could spend it on advertising on Facebook and on Twitter? People are on their phones all day. Advertisers found that an easier way to reach people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the very real problem that we were up against.
Yeah. Do you have any theories as to, you know, who or what the buyer might be and what they might want to do with the paper?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know anything. My theory is that they want the website and that they don't intend to do local journalism with it. But that's just conjecture. I think time will tell.
Mm-hmm. And this is because that's being done elsewhere.
What do you mean being done? In other cities.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we have seen that. You know, these websites, I guess, have some value because they rank highly on Google. We have a very good archive dating back to, I believe, the 90s when it all went online. We get a pretty steady thrum of web traffic. I had to force myself not to check our web traffic this morning. It was truly painful not to pull that up. So I don't know how we're doing with the day-old content, but I get there's some value for someone in that. And I think that's my theory.
Yeah. And do you think that's part of the reason the RFT was singled out for sale? Because Big Lou Holdings, it retained other alt weeklies in the Midwest and still owns Sauce.
Yes, it does continue to own four and a half publications, I guess you could say. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure why us. I do know we had the best web traffic of any of those publications. Maybe that was our doom. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. And as for the archive, what happens with that?
So the good news is I have no idea what's going to happen to the digital archive. That no longer belongs to us in any way, shape, or form. But the owner, whoever purchased the RFT, apparently did not purchase the bound archives. We have print issues dating back to when Ray Hartman founded this newspaper. We are missing the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the second issue, which was in December of 1978 onwards, they're in these lovely bound books. And I have made an agreement with WashU. They are going to take it for their library. And God bless them for reaching out and being willing to take these, because that should be preserved and will be.
We want to hear about your memories of the Riverfront Times. What's your reaction to the news? Do you have a favorite RFT story? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. or email us at talk@stlpr.org. We also have with us in studio Ray Hartman. With financial backing from Mark Vittert, Ray founded the Riverfront Times in 1977. He sold the paper in the late 1990s, and up until recently, he was a longtime panelist on 9PBS's Donnybrook, until he stepped aside to announce a run for Congress in Missouri's 2nd Congressional District. Ray, hello.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
So, Ray, I mean, before we talk about the founding of the RFT, what is your reaction to all of the news and what Sarah's just talked with us about?
Well, I'm very sad, like everybody is. And I'm very sad for Sarah and for amazing staff that she's put together. Sarah and I, if you've watched us on Donnybrook, occasionally disagree. And I'm no longer on Donnybrook, having retired from journalism. However, I have a less... I have a bit of a less pleasant reaction to Mr. Keating not being willing to talk to people. Mm-hmm. I understand he can't disclose the buyer, but that doesn't keep you from... I've always felt that those of us in journalism, this goes back to when I started, that it's always not set well with me when we know comment stories about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. But having said that, I think the biggest surprise to me wasn't that the print version is no longer around. In fact, I was surprised the print version lasted as long as it did. I'm very surprised and really would love to know why the digital version, which as someone who wrote for paper, thanks to Sarah, in recent years, in my mind, that was the audience that was I would assume was a larger audience. And so the part that I find a little astonishing is, given what an amazing voice it has been in recent years, and that's unrelated to me, other than my column, I was really surprised and still am. And and that's the kind of question I think somebody needs to step up and answer.
Right.
That's the part that I find the most puzzling. But, you know, as I say, I'm displeased about it. I'm off running for Congress, as you might know, in the 2nd District in Missouri. And so I probably should talk less than I usually do, but I it's a sad day for me, having started the paper. And by the way, Vittert actually came in after I started the RFT, but he was a great partner. But I started it I was Kit Bond's speechwriter in Jeff City, and I was such an amazing speechwriter that we lost the election, and the voters thought we should come back. And I was 24 when I started what was called Profile St. Louis. My original newspaper was started in Cleveland, Clayton, a historic building that's now part of the county jail. And I started the Riverfront Times as a spinoff downtown newspaper, actually a trial newspaper in November of 77 to try to save our company, but because we weren't doing that well. And the RFT just started as a little downtown newspaper.
Right.
And it worked for advertisers, and it evolved into an alt-weekly.
Right.
And believe it or not, it didn't have personals for the first 2 years. It was just downtown.
So, Ray, you mentioned voice, the voice of what the RFT is. Mm-hmm. What is that voice, and how was it related to what it started as back in 77?
Well, as I say, the only voice it had was let's eat, you know, and it was a downtown newspaper. I mean, that's all it was. And I got to a conference in 1980, and by 79, I had been man-eater editor for a long time at Mizzou. I decided one of the things we could do was make it a college newspaper for the real world. So we went from being a downtown paper to a college newspaper for the real world. And in 79, we initiated free personals, which I don't even know how to describe how free they were. Let's just say we let people for free put in their phone numbers.
Okay.
And sometimes they put in other people's phone numbers. And,
sure.
And sometimes they suggested that people that otherwise might not have very liberal attitudes about their personal social life were credited with having that. I mean, if we hadn't been so broke, we would have had some mighty fine lawsuits. But I mean, it was just crazy. I could tell you stories, some of which I couldn't actually read the ads on the air here.
Right, because
but
FCC has some regulations.
I don't even sure the First Amendment protection. No, but the, but anyway, so we had some great days, but I went to an Association of Alternative Newsweek. It was a fledgling group, and got inspired by what people who were doing what I called college newspapers for the real world, which at their essence was the alternative news weeklies. And we grew up together, and I have to say, I mean, you know, I don't brag about much, but we really had an amazing, because we connected with the readers downtown. When we went from being just a downtown paper to the personals, and then the key that really built us that people don't remember wasn't some editorials I wrote, was the fact that, and I know it's hard for you to imagine a life before not only the internet but cell phones, but that we were the only place that would cover live music. And this is back when the boomers were young, if you can imagine that. And we were the only place you could get, if you had a favorite band or a favorite bar, not only did we have both of them, but we cross-referenced them. And we built a lot of, we really did help the music industry grow here. And I'm proud of that. And that's what really, really made us useful. We, within not that many years, we were printing 100,000 newspapers that were flying away. And again, then at the same time, we became a voice that questioned the mainstream media, which I'm proud that Sarah, who's one of the very best editors of paper ever had, continued until this week.
Right.
And that we were telling the stories and asking the questions that the mainstream press wasn't asking. And so that's
really. Right. Sarah, how is it that you would describe the voice of the RFT today? I mean, in the intro, I described it as irreverent. And here's an example, actually, of one of the personal ads that had run some time ago. Quote, plain, boring woman, humorless and mean, seeks overeducated, insecure man for doomed relationship in mid-30s and still slim. But how long can that last? No photos, please. So there's clearly a history of that irreverence of humor. But the RFT was also doing really serious journalism. I mean, how would you define the voice that RFT had?
Yeah, it was kind of a complicated mix sometimes, in that we wanted to go after, go after the sacred cows and come at them sometimes with humor and to say the thing that nobody else wanted to say, to point out that the emperor has no clothes and to laugh about the fact that the emperor is naked. At the same time, we wanted to do and did really deep, in-depth investigative reporting. And then we would also do cultural coverage where we would sometimes write about raunchy or bizarre subjects. And so sometimes when we would call people for an interview, they'd be like, I don't know why you even want to know about this. Aren't you just a music rag? Or when we'd call people, you know, with a music story, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, you guys are just a bunch of lefties. And it was like when everything sort of came together, I think it made sense. But it was a mix that was sort of ultimately, you know, we tried to be truth tellers. And we did it with some mischievousness.
Yes.
We are going to take a very quick break here, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation. We're talking about the sale of the Riverfront Times and the sudden announcement yesterday that its entire news staff was laid off. Again, we want to hear about your memories of the Riverfront Times. What's your reaction to the news? Do you have a favorite RFT story? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Or send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Sarah Fenske, the now former executive editor of the Riverfront Times. She found out yesterday that the RFT was sold to an undisclosed buyer and that she and the entire news staff at the Alt Weekly had been laid off. We're also joined by Ray Hartman. He founded the RFT in 1977. We also have Daniel Hill on the line. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right, but I'd like to know how you're doing. You worked at the RFT for many years, Daniel, and you did so as music editor, and most recently, editor of lots of things. And you joined the show in March of 2020, near the beginning of the pandemic, and you were discussing why you refused to stop working even though you weren't getting paid. So, Daniel, what is going through your mind right now?
Well, I'm not going to do that again. it seems like it worked well the first time, but you know, you get diminishing returns on that eventually. You can't let people, you know, expect you to do that kind of thing. No, mostly what's going through my mind. I'm sad for me, of course, but I'm devastated for, you know, the loss of the RFT for the St. Louis region. I'm a lifelong St. Louisan. I grew up reading the paper since I was a teenager. You know what I mean? All the jobs that I used to have before I fell into journalism were, you know, delivering pizzas, and I'd sit in, you know, Emo's lobby and, you know, read these fascinating, you know, long form stories and then get to read about, like, you know, all the music that's happening in town and the food scene and just see the work of these really talented writers. And I was proud to be able to be involved at all and help to carry on that tradition. Mm-hmm. And for it to, you know, all come crashing down, it's just sad.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, in the time that you worked for the RFT, you wrote many memorable stories. And among those, there is one from 2019 that is about testing the limits of a bar, open concept, which was All You Can Drink. And the bar is on Cherokee Street. And you did so in a hot dog costume. As someone who, as you said, you were a longtime reader of the paper, I mean, is it safe to say that that story wouldn't have happened without the RFT?
Oh my God, are you kidding me? Yeah, no, that I couldn't sell that to anyone else. Absolutely not. No, and that's exactly the kind of thing is like, and by the way, the hot dog costume was necessary. I was going undercover, you know. I couldn't be recognized a second time. There's a method to all of this madness.
Okay.
I took this investigation very seriously, as we did with everything at the Riverfront Times. but you know, that's exactly the point, though. That's the type of thing that we were able to do at the paper that set us apart from legacy media and, you know, just any other outlet in town, any other outlet just about in the nation at this point.
Mm-hmm. And on a more serious note, what are you most proud of the work that you did at the RFT, whether people actually read it or it was happening, you know, behind the scenes, behind the pages?
I was just proud whenever I could get a laugh. My role at the paper, I've said before, is I was the large waving inflatable tube man outside the used car lot of journalism that was the Riverfront Times. And so I just like to direct everybody, you know, I would run around with my antics and whatever silly stuff that I was up to and just hope that would, you know, be flashy enough to draw people into the paper, and then they would actually like see the real journalism that was being done there by like real serious talented journalists, far more talented than I am, that were breaking stories and were, you know, holding power to account and all the stuff that journalism is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm most proud of, is that I was able to make anybody else read, you know, my more talented colleagues' work.
Well, you clearly are more than a humble hot dog. I'm sure that many people can attest to, and I've seen some response online, people talking about the work that you did and how much it meant to them. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, thank you for having me. And I just want to say one more thing that to piggyback off of what Sarah said earlier, in true RFT style, I'd like to say what apparently no one is willing to, and point out that an emperor that appears to me to have no clothes, who is the new owner, why the secrecy, show yourselves, you cowards, Daniel Hill out.
Daniel Hill, longtime writer and editor for the RFT. So Sarah, I asked this question about, you know, what Daniel was most proud of. What is the work that you are most proud of? Is there a particular story that rises to mind?
You know, there's not any single story. The RFT was such a collection of just odd marbles gathered together. But I guess what I love is that I was able to facilitate a place where you could have stories like the hot dog story, but you could also have really serious journalism. And that writers felt comfortable coming in with off-the-wall ideas that they knew nobody else would publish, and that they knew that we would have their back and we would make those stories as good as they could possibly be, and we would labor over them and we would care about getting it right, whether it was a story about a man in a hot dog suit or whether it was a takedown of a government program that wasn't working, that we put the same care and intent into both of those things, and that we found a way to say yes. You know, that we were willing to think outside the box. We had such a great crew and so much trust in each other that I think we were able to get away with things that we shouldn't have gotten away with. Mm-hmm. And that's a legacy I'm so proud of.
Yeah. Ray, when you look back on the legacy of mm-hmm. the Riverfront Times, I mean, what does that mean for you? What is its legacy?
It's pretty humbling, really, because I, you know, I didn't know what I was doing when I started a little downtown newspaper when I was 24, 25. Yeah, I'm proud. I mean, I look back and, you know, people particularly, I think back to the heyday in the 80s and 90s, and we were a little bit more about just crusading back then. Mm-hmm. And our motto was to question authority, which came out of, again, pardon me for being an old boomer, but it was question authority. And we did that, and we really were the only people in town in any medium, whether it's broadcast or print, that were willing to stand up to what has turned out to be a not, you know, well, let's just say we were raising the flags about needing more diversity of thought and in general in how St. Louis is run. I think back, Byron Clemens was one of our first reporters. He had us, thanks, and he's still going strong as an activist. We wrote the first stories about Coldwater Creek in 1983. I mean, I think about that, but we also were the folk, we were responsible for hundreds of thousands of dollars no longer being handed by the elite to the VP Fair, which had a very strange background. We did that. We fought. Now, we didn't always win. The first fight we really threw down on and lost was tearing down the title guarantee Buddha and International buildings for the Gateway Mall. Mm-hmm. And if you ever talk about something you haven't told you so about 40 years ago, that was the Gateway Mall was a huge issue. And we fought that fight. And that was our first emotional fight. Mm-hmm. But we also we had so many great people come and go that worked for them. Some of them no longer living. I think of some of the great editors. Julie Lobia was one. J.A. Lobia was most remarkable journalist I've ever seen. We had great editors like Sue Hegger and the late Ed Bishop, and managing editors and editors, Safira Med. I mean, we go on, and Sarah was one of the very best. There's a lot of folks that really, and then at the end of the day, we really did support and help so many good causes. We weren't known for that, but just in what we did, right. So many of the best causes in St. Louis are real losers today, that there's not at least a digital version of the RFT. I just think it is a tragic loss. And it's a little humbling that this little newspaper that in the 1980s, when we did a story, we weren't even called out by name. People like the Post, if they did it, it was a weekly newspaper. It's come a long way. Mm-hmm. And I'm very sad that it's gone. And I'm particularly sad for people like Daniel Hill and Sarah, and as I said, how they've been treated, as well as how the consequence to our St. Louis area.
Right. We asked for questions or comments on social media about this news, and someone on Instagram commented, "This sucks," all caps. "This will definitely leave a big gap in the news coverage that is necessary to avoid becoming a news desert. I feel awful for those who got laid off." And then Nathan on X said, "It's truly another devastating blow to journalism. The paper cuts come nonstop, it feels like, but this is a slicing limb clean off." Sarah, do you think what's happening to alt-weeklies is unique, or is it the same thing that we're seeing happening with so many print journalism outlets?
Yeah, I think it's happening with pretty much all legacy media outlets, magazines, newspapers. We're all in the same boat. And, you know, when this happened, I don't know that I had any particular plan to talk to so many media outlets, but it was just amazing how many people I heard from who were like, "Yeah, it was you guys today. It could be us tomorrow." We all understand that this is a ship that has a lot of holes in it, and it really makes me worried about the future of our democracy. I just don't think people can get the information they need from TikTok.
Mm-hmm. I second that. If I might jump in, that is well said. I mean, it really is a national, it's a national crisis.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, you are also the volunteer, I'm going to say that again, volunteer executive director for the River City Journalism Fund. And that is a nonprofit that funds local journalism. And we've run many of those stories at St. Louis Public Radio and talked with people on our show, right? Is there potentially an opportunity for that fund to have an increased role now?
I think we'd love to figure that out. You know, I mean, for me, I do have to find a paid job. I don't have a trust fund. I can't just be a volunteer. But I don't intend to stop my work with that fund. We have gotten the generosity of the community. People are donating. We are paying for writers and editors to do big, important stories. And we're going to keep that up. And I think what we have to figure out is, what do we do without the distribution channel of the RFT? Mm-hmm. St. Louis Public Radio has been a terrific partner in that. You guys publishing our stories, putting them on your social media channels. We have a couple other publications in town we've also worked closely with. The RFT going still leaves a vacuum. We knew that when the RFT would tweet or share one of our stories, that St. Louis readers would see it. And the challenge, I think, for writers and editors doing good work is in part raising the money to pay for it. The second part is to find that distribution channel to connect with readers where they are. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I know Dick Weiss and I, the chairman of that fund, we are going to be focused on. And if anybody wants to help us, we're at rcjf.org.
And as we close here, Sarah, what is next for you beyond meeting with the staff and commiserating over drinks tonight?
We are doing that tonight. I was just trying to figure out where a recent resume was. I may have to start from scratch. I'm going to try to find a job. I am definitely going to stay in St. Louis. I would love to stay in journalism. I have no idea if that's going to be possible.
And as we close the segment, I want to mention a couple more comments that we got on social media, perhaps to buoy spirits a little bit. On Facebook, Mark wrote, "We're losing an important perspective. As a teenager coming from Washington, Missouri to the city, the Riverfront Times was the first taste I had of the idea of an alternative press. It had a youthful voice and talked about culture other than baseball and museums. I love baseball museums, but there's more to St. Louis than those staples. I don't think influencers or even well-known journalists with social media platforms will replace this type of news because social media are about economies of scale, and this was a local paper." And Jennifer writes, "I'm going to miss their long-form journalism. They had some excellent in-depth articles, and it's a punch in the gut to my inner 20-year-old who wants to know what bands are coming to the local clubs." Ray Hartman is founder of the Riverfront Times, started in 1977. Sarah Fenske is now the former executive editor of the Riverfront Times. Thank you both for making time to join us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.